From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 263, recorded live Thursday, April 21st, 2011. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Chris Sells about writing JavaScript and HTML.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. I was up late coding. What were you doing? This week, we've got Chris Sells talking about what it's like to go from being a C++ person to being a JavaScript person. Hey, Chris, were you up late coding?
Well, it depends on what you think is late. I think I was up early coding. I actually went to bed about 7:30 this morning.
Wow. So you are either under a schedule crunch, or you are having fun, or both?
Actually, it is a combination of both, yes.
That's fantastic. So what are you working on? I haven't talked to you a lot lately, and I don't know what you're doing.
So I'm working on JavaScript and HTML tools over in the developer division at Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a new job for me as of November of last year, so I'm still relatively new.
Okay. And are you still a program manager where you're coming up with features, or are you writing code now?
I am a program manager. I do come up with features, and I am writing code. I get to do a lot of that. Also, I've been writing a bunch of prose lately, too, which has been really great.
Hmm.
I find the mix of writing code and then writing articles about writing that code, I find that a very nice mix. It makes me happy.
That's cool. Were you a little scared going from, I mean, you're a, you know, old school programmer, if I may. I mean that in a compliment kind of a way. I haven't thought of you as being too much of an HTML guy, although I know that we'd spend a little bit of time working on ASP.NET MVC together. And you know, you've built your own website, and, you know, you're certainly a competent HTML guy, but I don't think Chris Sells and JavaScript are kind of in the same sentence.
Yeah, that's, scared? No. I love new technologies. I love new challenges. I love new things, new adventures. I'm happy to do new things all the time. I'll tell you, I do feel like I am climbing quite a curve. The last time I did any JavaScript was literally before I did any .NET. So it was 10 years ago. I started .NET, you know, when it was in beta before 1.0, and have been doing it pretty solidly in a variety of ways since then. And it is literally just in the last 6 months that I've done any serious JavaScript. And I have done pretty decent HTML from the server side, UI composition. I'm a big MVC fan. Rewrote my whole website a couple of times, right? So I'm familiar with HTML. The thing I was only a little bit familiar with is the smallest amount of CSS that I needed to get by, and I just avoided JavaScript altogether. I don't think there's any real JavaScript on my website. And I have been doing pretty serious CSS 3, you know, and we just released a CTP of IE10, and I've been writing CSS and HTML5 to take care of those advanced features in our browser. I mean, it's been pretty hardcore.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you, it's the thing that has been most surprising to me. It's amazing how much you can do with how little in JavaScript. I mean, when you get done, when you make it work, right, the amount of JavaScript you have to do amazing things is a teeny tiny amount. The problem I struggle with still, and you know, I'm sure I will for a while, it's a thing, right? It's a real platform, it's a real environment that has been growing up for like 15 years. Mm-hmm. So I shouldn't feel so bad about, you know, still feeling intermediate after 6 months. But even though it's a tiny little bit of code, by the time you're done, getting to what that tiny bit of code is still banging my head against the wall a lot.
Is that idiomatic? I mean, is it a matter of this is a new language and you need to figure out, you know, what the most elegant and kind of eloquent way to say something is? Or is it tooling? What keeps you from quickly finding that? Is it like starting out in Ruby where you just have to figure out what the right number of characters is to say what you want to say clearly?
So it's interesting. I think that the language itself I like. It's very minimal. But I love what the community has done with it, specifically over the last 5 years, kind of how they have just kind of pushed on every nook and cranny of JavaScript to make it do things that it was never meant to do and is still not meant to do. You know, the way you use functions to mimic, you know, private member variables in simulated classes. I mean, this is all deep voodoo magic, and it's very fun to read that code and understand and to kind of build up your own kind of library of patterns and the techniques and the way you do things. And that's fun. And one of the first things I did was I wrote a blog post all about this kind of set-based declarative programming model that kind of Link really turned me onto in C++, and then finding essentially a similar set of techniques and operators over in the JavaScript world made me very happy. So it's not that I can't be happy in the language. What I'm finding is this core idiom of JavaScript and HTML and CSS of, if you get it wrong, we're just going to ignore that you did anything, right? This conspiracy of silence around errors and failure drives me crazy.
Hmm. Well, this is coming from a person who literally wrote the book on WPF, and certainly as that person, you see the parallels between some markup, some styling, and some code. Except WPF is on the other side, where it's extremely unforgiving about having that markup incorrect.
Yeah, I like that. I really do. I like, that there is value in dynamic languages, and I'll tell you, I love just being able to craft data as instances on the fly with whatever I've got. That is a fabulous, powerful environment to be able to work in. So I'm really loving it. But when it comes to just, three layers deep of JavaScript, libraries and controls and events and asynchronous programming and all of this stuff, and somewhere deep in there was an error, mm-hmm. and we're just not going to tell you about it. And we're going to make you figure that out. And that drives me crazy.
But isn't this like the old days where you had a debug console open? I mean, when I learned my first 91-line C program that was a Hello World on Windows 3, you'd have like a debug console. And isn't this kind of harkening back to those things? Like, they'll tell you something went wrong. They'll just bury it deep in debug lines.
Yeah, except I don't know of... I mean, the libraries I've been using... have not been steeped in, you know, debug output or exceptions. It's mostly just swallowing those errors and moving on. And the browser is the worst culprit, right? There just is no kind of idea of, hey, we're going to notice an error and tell you about it.
Do you think that this is something really I see on all the browsers, though. Like, basically, it does something and it doesn't tell you why.
I think it's deep philosophical, right? I mean, I think fundamentally, you know, that's the HTML has always been very forgiving, and JavaScript has been a language of gluing together little bits of HTML. And the language itself and the usage of the language, and again, I'm coming new to this world, right? But it's been all about what is the least amount we can give you and then get out of your way. And in fact, you know, I've been reading the canon of the books, and I've been, you know, immersing myself in the community and trying to understand the philosophy. And, you know, I've attended ECMAScript standards meetings with Brandon Eich and Douglas Crockford. You know, I have been steeped in as much of that as I can possibly cram into my head. And I think Douglas Crockford says that the beauty of JavaScript is you can be productive without understanding what's going on. And in that kind of environment, it's got to be very forgiving to make that happen.
Isn't that what they said about Visual Basic?
It was indeed.
So this is interesting. This is another one of those languages where you don't necessarily need to go know what's going on, but if you do, you can be like a ninja. Like, I mean, I was a VB programmer, VB3 and C were kind of where I started, and I would end up combining the two. I would do Visual Basic 3/C interop, and I would grab window messages and paint icons where they weren't supposed to be and do all sorts of wacky stuff. You think people will do the same thing?
I remember those days. I was mostly a Visual Basic programmer when I think it was 4.0 when it had COM, right? And so that's when I was deep into COM. And we had this idea of, you know, Visual Basic as the glue language and C++ as the extension language. And every time I'd sit down to write even the simplest Visual Basic app, I could never make it through the whole app without saying, oh my God, I have to drop down to C++ and write this component or that component. Or, I mean, I couldn't just write a VB app. That is very much not my experience with JavaScript. I could write whole, real, productive apps with JavaScript in the browser and never need to drop down to C++.
Do you think one day you're going to be itching to do that? You'll be on Windows and there'll be some, you know, some COM object that you want or some .NET thing you're going to want to call?
It's interesting. The JavaScript community has been working so hard for so long that they have this whole... I mean, and of course, JavaScript itself is the glue language for a very extensive visual environment. CSS, HTML, the canvas, SVG, right? These are powerful core functionality. And then, you know, JavaScript has become this language for, I mean, it started as this little language that kind of worked in whatever browser you were targeting your code at. And then the JavaScript community, this amazing thing where they used the features of this language to kind of smooth over the cracks between the differences between the various browsers. And then once they did that, then they said, great, now we have a base. And now we can go forward with this base of libraries and techniques. And then we can build amazing things on top of it, like physics engines and sprite engines and all of this fun stuff for games, but then also like validation and data access and, you know, all of this stuff for line of business. And it's kind of like, you know, with JavaScript turns the entire world into like a MySpace programmer. You remember MySpace?
Yeah, I remember they died last week.
Yeah, but I mean, it was for a while there was this big market for, hey, these little widgets, these little bits of code that I can purchase and paste on my MySpace page. And people just built these, you know, super functional monstrosities in general, but they didn't really know what they were doing. They could just grab these little bits and pieces and paste them in and make that work. And, you know, the JavaScript has turned the world into MySpace programmers, which is great because that means that people can get all kinds of functionality in their websites and web applications very quickly. Because, you know, I've been learning JavaScript the same way everyone does, which is, hey, how do I do this? Well, let me go to Bing and figure out what the last 15 years of people have been doing to solve this problem. And it's very rare that I can't find somebody who's done something. Now, the weird part is I look at the code and, you know, it's 80%. It's like, wow, this is not this programmer was not a full-time programmer, right? This is a programmer who's a full-time something else, was using JavaScript to get their job done. And then occasionally I stumble across these ninjas, these folks who are full-time programmers and who do know this stuff deep in their bones. And you look at what they've come up with and you're just in awe of what they can do with the environment.
Hi, this is Scott coming to you from another place in time. Are you using agile practices to manage your software development? There's lots of tools in the market that manage the steps of a project, but most of them focus on individual roles. Get ready for a solution that caters for the success of the whole team. The guys at Telerik introduced TeamPulse. It's an agile project management tool that'll help you gather ideas, estimate, plan, track progress in a common workspace. Finally, companies, regardless of their size, can use a lightweight and convenient tool that makes all the stakeholders work as a united team, even if they're in different countries. By combining intuitive user interface and the power of Silverlight, TeamPulse removes the roadblocks that you typically face in applying Agile in an effective manner. No more lost data, no disparate systems, no lack of critical analytics regarding the health and velocity of your project. See for yourself, get a free copy for 5 users and 1 project at Telerik.com/TeamPulse. And please do thank Telerik for supporting Hansel Minutes on their Facebook fan page, Facebook.com/TELERIK, Telerik. We do appreciate it. There wouldn't be a Hansel Minutes if there wasn't Telerik helping us.
Isn't that the same as any language? I mean, you're just saying that there's a whole lot of sample code out there. Is it that it's easier to copy paste and incorporate because the pieces are kind of more atomic? They're more compartmentalized?
Actually, it's funny. I've found that JavaScript is exactly the opposite. Modularization, componentization, composition is harder because it's all just one, on the browser, it's all just one big global soup, right? Global variables, you literally can't do anything unless you use some level of global variables, which is very foreign to me as a, you know, I've been a component-based programmer forever, and it's all about, you know, the global state, that is not for you. You don't get to touch that. Ever.
Now, wait a second, though. When you everyone says in best practices in JavaScript, you're supposed to make sure that your objects aren't in global space and that they're in their own kind of scope. Are you saying that to do anything significant, you have to have global?
Okay, so it's interesting. So on the server side with Node.js, which I've also spent some time playing with, they actually have a module system where it's actually a really nice one where you're loading code, and you get to decide as the client of the code what the namespace is, where you put your code. And really, I'm sorry, on the server side, there's really not any global space. I mean, it's only what you put into your app, right? It's only what you build up. You right. get control over that. On the client side, it's the only way you can do that is by raw discipline. And it doesn't matter anyway, because anyone can reach into any of the global spaces and just help themselves. Like, you know, if I wanted to have my code run, right, somebody included my library, and I just want to go up to all of the built-in types and add all my own functions because I think those are cool, I can do that in JavaScript. And in fact, that's how most of these, a lot of these libraries work, right? I mean, jQuery, very popular library, works by adding operators in the global space.
Yeah, but aren't they special?
They're not special. No. It turns out jQuery is just like any other library. And in fact, what that means then is that some of these libraries step on each other. Right? If they try to do the same things to the same types in slightly different ways, then they start stepping on each other. And there's not a whole lot you can really do about that except not use that code.
That seems to be a recurring theme in JavaScript, at least in my experience, is that best practices are often based on willpower and awareness of certain idioms. Is that different or looser? Is JavaScript sloppier than other languages that it requires people to know what the current best practice is? Or are all languages like that?
Well, it's interesting. So if you're building a library for JavaScript, you have to really want to do to keep yourself isolated from the user. And it's so easy to just say, you know what, the DOM's right there. I can just reach over into this space and just get this little piece of information I need, and I don't have to ask anyone for it. Oh, and I can make their lives a little easier. I can put this here and that there, and it'll just make their lives easier. And then suddenly, you know, you've turned it into your world, and then they're just living in it. But if you're an application programmer, it is nice not to have to go through the ceremony that you have to, right? You don't have to have classes. You don't have to have namespaces. You can just write your code, and it will do largely what you expect. And if you want to impose, you know, a little bit of discipline, you're allowed to turn the dial up and down as much as you want. And from an application developer standpoint, that's a very nice dial to be able to turn. In a lot of languages, and actually .NET is like this, you are pretty much writing libraries even when you're writing applications. So you're going through all of the same disciplines just to get your code to execute and plug into the libraries and the frameworks you're using. You're using all those same disciplines, whether you want to or not. It's just it's imposed on you by the environment. But with JavaScript, you can be very sloppy and get very far very fast when you're writing apps. And that's nice.
See, that's very interesting, though, because I recently did some JavaScript that was a little specific. It was for the Mix keynote, and I wanted some JavaScript that would add jump lists for the podcast in IE9. So it was actually a browser-specific and platform-specific thing. It would only work on IE9. It would only work on Windows. And I wanted some buttons so that when you hover over the taskbar, you could push play, and then you could actually play the podcast. So it would be a podcast player without using a plugin. And yeah. I went and wrote it all.
That was a lovely talk.
It was like 20 lines of JavaScript. It was ridiculous. It was so easy.
It is amazing how far you can get, how fast. Yeah.
Well, but then I showed it to a real JavaScript programmer, Dave Ward. And Dave Ward said, no. This has to be a jQuery plugin. So then we did a screen sharing, and my 40 lines of JavaScript became 90 lines of JavaScript, you know, with a framework to make it a jQuery plugin, which made it better. Like, it felt more componentized and it felt tidier, and I could move it out of inline, because apparently JavaScript programmers don't like their script in their markup. That they think that's really bad. You have to have your script unobtrusive. So it made my script unobtrusive.
Well, I mean, you have to qualify who you're talking about, right? I mean, you can't just say a JavaScript programmer.
A good one.
Well, good. I mean, again, define good. I mean, C++ programmers, you know, it's hard for those people to not be computer science graduates, right?
Hmm.
But yeah, JavaScript that's an interesting programmers, point. Right, they can have real lives and still be productive in JavaScript. And that's the thing.
Good point. Okay, well, then that means that the world is going to be split between JavaScript connoisseurs and JavaScript gourmands, you know?
In fact, I would argue that's actually true. And I don't know what the statistics are, but in terms of penetration, I mean, that browser is everywhere. So JavaScript is just everywhere. That's a thing, too.
Hmm. Well, so I was excited to learn how to make a jQuery plugin, but also disappointed that it was entirely convention-based. Like, someone wrote the prototype, no pun intended, years ago.
Yeah, yep.
And now we all have to do it that way because that guy said so.
Sure, and that's the way jQuery plugins work. And, you know, John Resnick got to decide, right, when he built jQuery, what jQuery plugins looked like and worked like. But of course, there's nothing stopping those jQuery plugins to do their thing and oh so much more.
Right, exactly.
I mean, there really are, on the client side, in the browser, no boundaries with JavaScript. And that causes problems, obviously.
So do you see yourself in the future writing JavaScript and HTML and XAML and XAML styles, or have you done what you needed to do in XAML and now you're kind of exploring new space just because you're bored?
I am very much exploring this new space. I still have these moments where I'm writing, you know, a program to run my life, right? I'm writing a program to scrape data from mint.com and throw it into a database so that I can do data analysis on it, right? Or I'm writing some tool that munges. Actually, I wrote a tool the other day that built took a Visual Studio project and did a bunch of kind of analysis on it and turned it into a Visual Studio template. These are the kinds of things that I still fall back on C Sharp for, because I love C Sharp. I absolutely do. But that is happening less and less, and more I'm writing my day-to-day programs, my things that I actually care about in HTML and JavaScript and CSS. And my goal is to be, you know, pure, to do everything. In fact, I've spent a bunch of time thinking about and trying to find a real JavaScript shell. I've tried a half a dozen times with PowerScript and never gotten very far, but I would really love it if it was JavaScript.
Where do you do most of your writing in? I think one of the interesting things that came up during the Mixed keynote was it is unclear to the public what everyone is writing these things in. I mean, there are a lot of cool IE9 demos, but it was unclear what they were writing them in. If they're writing them in Notepad or in Visual Studio or in some magic thing we don't know about. What do you do your work in?
I Notepad is fine for reading and making quick edits, but day in, day out, I write HTML in markup, CSS in markup, and JavaScript, and I do it all in Visual Studio.
So do you use the JScript extensions for Visual Studio, the extension manager extensions that have been released?
I saw those go by. I haven't used them. Are they good? Should I use them?
The word on the street is that the JScript extensions were features that were going to go in the next version of Visual Studio that they got able to put into a plugin. So it adds like bracket matching and smarter IntelliSense and just a whole pile of goodness. So yes, the word on the street is it's much, much better. It's like getting a newer version of Visual Studio as far as the JavaScript is concerned.
That's cool. I should check that out then.
Yeah, yeah. And it's all packaged up as an extension, so you should check that out.
The thing that I find is super handy is, you know, the thing that makes all dynamic languages wonderful, right? I can just stop my program wherever I want to and just start exploring the environment I find myself in, and then I can write my programs based on that. It is amazing how much of my program I write that way.
That's impressive. That's impressive. So you think that JavaScript is going to be good for Microsoft?
Wow. You know, that is...
or is it bad? Yeah.
Right? I mean, you know, for a couple of years now, it seems like Steve Sinofsky and everyone on down has really been banging the HTML5 and CSS and JavaScript drums, and that's kind of interesting. That's very interesting because, you know, it's a cross platform. I mean, it's what Java was meant to be.
Right. Yeah. Like exactly. JavaScript is what Java was meant to be, and if you do it right, then theoretically you don't need Windows.
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing. So it's interesting to think about, well, gosh, I can just write my programs and have it run anywhere. And, of course, the ubiquity of the browser, it's not even just PCs, right? It's devices, it's tablets, it's toaster ovens, right? I mean, it's everywhere. It's crazy. It is very truly the thing that Java was meant to be and never came close to being. On the other hand, you think about, well, what's the business model for Microsoft? I mean, we absolutely, or you can see an IE9. And I don't know if you've seen the reviews go by for IE9. It's been amazing, actually. I'm very happy I'm closely associated with that team, and that always makes me happy to see them successful and to see us successful. But it seems like the goal is to really make Windows the best platform you could imagine for running websites, right? This idea of, you know, native websites and integrating websites directly into the shell so they look and feel like applications, like any other kind of application. That's a pretty, I mean, it makes me happy as a Windows user to have those kinds of functionalities built in, and to have IE9 be just a kick-ass browser makes me happy too.
Yep, we got to catch up though, it seems to me. We're a little behind. There's a whole world of JavaScript people out there that don't even care that we're out here.
It's very interesting. Really, IE8 was kind of a, hey, we're still here, don't forget about us, kind of stopgap. And IE9, you know, seems to be the first real browser we've done in a long time. And we're still dealing with the mess we created with IE6, right?
Right, exactly. Cool. Well, thanks so much for talking to me today, Chris. It's good to know that that Cells is doing JavaScript now, so we should check it out.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Happy to do it.
All right. Well, thanks. And also, thanks for staying up till 7 in the morning working on it, whatever you're doing.
Well, that's dedication. Someday I'll be able to share what I've been staying up until 7 in the morning doing.
Cool. I'll talk to you soon.
Yep.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.